Hello, and welcome to Season 5 of the 40 Drinks Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie McLaughlin, and I am so happy to be back with you after a short and restorative break. My husband and I got away to the California desert for a week to recharge our vitamin D, take a little break, and get some warmth back into our bones, which I hope will see us through to the end of the winter here in New England and right on into the spring. Now, I know we've had a pretty easy winter in the Northeast this year, but that does not mean that the next 6 weeks are going to be all easy peasy. It's 42 and degrees and raining as I record this, which is what I usually call Irish weather, and it's going to look a lot like this until early May, so I am going to need all of that reserved vitamin D from vacation. One of the things I ended last season talking about was how I don't have enough fun in my life. And frankly, I don't think many of us adults, or most of us adults, do such a great job at building fun into our lives. So if you've been around for a while, you know that I manage a couple of chronic illnesses, and that means I have to manage my energy, or my spoons, as we call it in the chronic illness community. And usually I designate most of those spoons for responsibilities, work, and this podcast for the most part. But my last guest of season 4, Stephanie Rose, hit me with the mind-bending concept of color coding my spoons so that I can allocate them for things that keep me lit up, so that I can save some for things that will build energy and generate energy rather than just using it. And let me throw in another thread here. My guest in episode 44 was Teresa Thomas, who introduced me to a concept that she developed called 50 Fun Things. And this came from something that she did to celebrate her 50th birthday, which had a lot of similarities to what I did to celebrate my 40th birthday, my 40 Drinks project. So last summer when I turned 52, I made a list of like 52-ish fun things that I wanted to do this year. And on vacation, I allocated almost all of my spoons to fun, and I checked off several of my fun things, including travel more and vacation at least once per quarter. Those things kind of overlapped, but certainly we can check those boxes. Spend quality time with special people. That's one of my fun things because that's something that really does fill me up and give me energy. And so there were two couples we know who live in California who made their way out to Palm Springs to spend time with us, which just made us feel so loved, which was so awesome. And we also spent time with my cousin and his wife and her sister the night before we had to fly home. So real great quality time with some really special people. So there's a check in that box. And then the absolute highlight of my week, the item on my list said, see a giraffe up close and in person, which I did at a place called the Living Desert, which is a zoo type place outside of Palm Springs, where I had an emotional experience feeding a giraffe. I loved it so much. I literally was in like almost in tears because this giraffe was eating romaine lettuce out of my hand. Oh my God, it was amazing. He actually licked my fingers. But when I looked at that list, even though I was able to add a bunch of things over vacation, I realized that I only have about 16 entries on my fun things list. And my birthday is like a little less than 6 months away. So I had better get busy having some more fun this year. And then while I was looking at it, I did see that on the list of fun things, I had an entry that says parentheses, comparatively, wild weekend in Las Vegas, someplace I haven't been in, more than a decade, maybe closer to two. But I just received an email this week from Simone Grace Soule about a training she's doing in Las Vegas in July that costs, in her words, 100 human dollars. So if there's anyone out there that's listening and thinking of going to Simone's event, please let me know, because it might just give me the push I need to register for that event. And then I'd be able to tick off a couple more things on the list, certainly travel and Las Vegas. And then maybe while we're there, we could drive a race car or go indoor skydiving or see a concert. And then I could check off another item or two of fun. Another thing I like to do for fun, and this isn't on the list because it's something I really just do all the time, is read. And I read mostly fiction, mostly novels. And I just recently finished the second book of the Fourth Wing series, which completely pissed me off. So if there's anyone out there listening who's a Fourth Wing fan, hit me up so that we can discuss the ending of book two, because I do not have anyone I can talk to about it. But I've been rotating in books into my fiction, into my novels. I've been rotating in books that are a little bit more related to this podcast. I started with a couple of memoirs, No One Tells You This by Glynis McNichol, and then Thanks for Waiting, The Joy and Weirdness of Being a Late Bloomer by Dori Shafrir, both of whom I hope to be able to entice onto the podcast to talk about their turning 40 experiences. But I've also been adding some nonfiction kind of self-help and like personal development books as well. Because the more I have conversations with people around their midlife transition, and there's 84 episodes already published. This is 85, and I'm just about to record episode number 100. So the more I have these conversations, the more I feel like I want to add context to them, and I want to add a foundation for the conversations. I find myself becoming really hungry for more information about why and how we make it through this transformational period, and not just sort of the stories in a vacuum. So a book that I'm working my way through now is one that my career coach introduced me to when I was 36 and had left my last full-time job. It's called Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes by William Bridges. And this is a huge international bestseller. It was first published in 1979. The copy I bought most recently, my old copy having been lent out at some point, was literally the 40th anniversary edition. So this thing's got some legs. And the book is full of wisdom and insight, and I'm really enjoying rereading it with sort of the podcast thesis in mind. And I'm only about halfway through it now, so I'm sure that I'll mention more about it through this season. But there are three things that have really stuck out to me so far that I wanted to share with you right now. The first item is change versus transition. So the way William Bridges presents them, they are not the same thing at all. These two words are not interchangeable. They do not mean the same thing. A change he describes as situational and external. So that could be starting or leaving a job or a relationship, having a baby, moving to a new place, the death of a parent or a friend or a spouse, getting married or divorced, starting or buying a business, leaving the military, changing the career, sending your kid off to college. All of these things are changes. Now, a transition is psychological and internal. So it is the reorientation or redefinition of the self that you go through in order to incorporate changes into your life. And Bridges says that unless transition takes place, change doesn't work, which is kind of interesting when you take that theory then and apply it to all the little changes we try to make in our lives, from eating right and exercising more to spending less and, you know, all of those things. So that's as I continue through this, keep the little things in mind in addition to the big things. So Bridges says that transition really is the source of most of our troubles. It's not actually the changes. He says, without going through transition, change is merely rearranging the furniture of your life. And he goes further and says that all the preparation that we do for making the changes in our lives does very little to prepare us for the transition element that goes along with it. And interestingly, he points out that there are other cultures that still have rites of passage that mark these transitions, that help, where from a societal point of view, they help someone let go of a chapter that's ending and then move into the next chapter, sort of unencumbered by the past. And that little piece reminded me of my conversation with Paula Conroy in episode 61. Now, she talked a lot about archetypes, the maiden, mother, and crone. But really the interesting thing about my conversation with her is that she works at something called the Rites of Passage Institute in Australia, which is another rabbit hole I really want to find time to go down, and maybe even give me a reason to travel to Australia. And that would certainly count on my list of fun things. But, you know, rites of passage have mostly been lost from our American experience. And there is certainly nothing that exists at midlife other than, you know, black balloons and over the hill napkins for your 40th birthday party, which really isn't super helpful or supportive. I mean, think of a graduation. When I came up, you know, you did a high school graduation and a college graduation, but I know these days there are graduations from much younger years as well, whether it be from middle school to high school, or middle school to junior high, or even kindergarten to first grade. These are things that really help you mentally kind of process that you're leaving something behind and you're moving into the next stage. So there are some of these things that we have as kids, that help us mark the passing of time and the progression of stages. But as adults, there's very, very little in our American culture, that I'm aware of that helps us really understand that there are stages and that we move through them. And we don't all move through them at the same time. We don't all move through them in the same exact order or way. But a lot of times I think we look at adulthood as this one long thing that's the same, homogenous, that's the word I was looking for, this one long homogenous stage of life, when it isn't. There are stages that we go through even as adults. And that's why I love another book, the book Passages by Gail Sheehy, which really kind of presents the thesis for the whole podcast. And I know I've spoken about this before, and I talk about it a lot in my conversations with my guests, that there are predictable transitions and crises of adult life that we work our way through. And of course, my focus is the decade, the 35 to 45 decade. So this concept of rites of passage helping you sort of close the door on a stage of life and prepare you sort of mentally and emotionally for walking into the next stage of life, there's very little about that in midlife. I know there are people who are out there working on divorce transitions, which is wonderful. Working from people who are creating experiences and communities around that transition from a married person to a divorced person. But you know, from a general standpoint, and certainly around age 40, there isn't anything culturally that helps us understand that we're moving through a stage. So the second thing that I want to highlight from this book, Transitions, is the process of transition. So change, as Bridges notes, is really the simpler part. It's tactical. But transition, as he presents it, is a three-stage process. So first, there's an ending, which is counterintuitive, right? We always think of things starting, but transition actually starts with the ending of what came before. And then there's a neutral zone, and then there's the new beginning. So he describes the subject of the book itself as, and I'll quote, "the difficult process of letting go of an old situation, of suffering the confusing nowhere of in-betweenness, and of launching forth again in a new situation." He calls it a natural process of disorientation and reorientation that marks the path of growth. And I can certainly tell you from personal experience and from my guests' stories as well that the disorientation part is real. I often call it the messy middle. And this leads me to the third thing from the book that I want to talk about today. And so let's start by examining where transition begins with the ending, right? Bridges says that we have to let go of that old thing before we can pick up the new one. Almost as if we can't really hold both things at the same time. And he suggests that what you bring to a transitional situation is the style you developed for dealing with endings. And as an exercise, he suggests looking back throughout your life at endings to see if you can understand how you deal with endings. He says, go all the way back to early childhood and try to remember your earliest experiences with endings. Maybe it's the ending of kindergarten or first grade. Maybe your family moved. Maybe it's the new baby coming home, which looks an awful lot like a beginning, but is certainly the ending of your being an only child. And when I think back that far for myself, I have a hard time coming up with specific memories of endings. I sort of remember my little brother coming home when I was 4, but it's more the memory of the picture of me holding him instead of like an actual memory of my own. And I definitely have distinct memories from kindergarten and first grade, but not of the years ending or moving to the next class. My family moved when I was 8. We moved from New York back up to New Hampshire. But I don't really remember leaving the old house. I don't remember it being packed. I don't remember boxes. I don't remember really much about that part. I just remember sort of being in the new house. And I'm sure my parents positioned it to me, as was absolutely the truth, that we were going home, right? My family is, both sides of my family are from New Hampshire. So we were going home and I was going to be back with all my cousins. But those aren't clear memories for me. I think I might have said in at least one of my conversations before that I have very little broad memory of my childhood. I have specific moments or happenings that are clear to me, but not really that long look at what it was like to be me as a kid. And I don't know exactly why that is. Honestly, sometimes I think it's because of the illnesses that I've dealt with as an adult. I feel like they might have wiped out some element of my long-term memory. But for whatever reason, I don't have that. I can picture moments, memories, specifics, but not the full story. So, but Bridges presents another way to look at this. And this was the one that was really revelatory for me. He says, think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or a night on the town. And oh boy, does that bring things into a much clearer focus for me. My husband Patrick would be guffawing if he were sitting here right now. He would remind me that I am usually, almost always, one of the last people to leave a party or an event. It's practically a joke between us. As a matter of fact, oh my God, I just remembered this little story. I used to volunteer for the St. Patrick's Parade Committee here in where I live. And I did that for about a decade. And on the night before the parade, there's a volunteers meeting. And I was a big part of running that meeting for several years. And the meeting had started. We had gone through everything we needed to go through. It had ended. But, you know, there's always details and bits and pieces that, you know, the parade coordinator and myself and the parade president, we were trying to nail down. And I remember Patrick coming up to me. And actually, I almost have no memory of this. It's just another one of our stories. Patrick came up to me and sort of said, like, hey, can we go? Like, you know, most of the volunteers like put on their coats and like left. And the story says, I turned to him and I just said, settle in, Patrick, settle in. Another one of those moments. I honestly do not have a clear memory of that, but he does. And it's just become sort of legend in our relationship because it's just the truth. I linger. I don't want the fun to end. I want to wallow in the energy of the evening, of the event, of the time. And when I take that character trait and then lay it over the transitions in my life, there's really a lot that starts to make sense for me because I stay too long. And often that means that I have decisions that are made for me instead of making them for myself. I did it at my last full-time job, which I have said many times. I left that job by being escorted to the front door. and I did it in relationship after relationship. I even remember, and this was in my late 30s, I was in a particularly tumultuous relationship. And I remember sort of having a lightning bolt hit me one day that I have a hard time quitting. And that's why I found it so difficult to leave the relationship. But maybe if I can sort of add context to that conclusion that I came to, maybe it's not so much that I have a hard time quitting, but it's also about how I handle transition. Because I'm pretty good with change. I feel like I always have been. Change doesn't freak me out. It doesn't stop me. I usually face it actually with excitement. But transition is a horse of a different color. So Bridges says that whether you're someone who dashes out of the party early, maybe even without saying goodbye, or if you're someone who stays until the lights come on, that's merely your style of dealing with endings. And that both of those, the ones who leave early and the ones who stay late, are actually ways of avoiding endings. Which is interesting because that implies that there are people who learned to deal with endings much more productively by realizing it's time to go, saying goodbye, grabbing their coat, and moving on to whatever's next. which also provides a wonderful segue into what's coming up next on the 40 Drinks podcast this season. I have another wonderful lineup of guests for you this season, and I am so excited to introduce you to them. Interestingly, so far for season 5, there are more men than women so far. And I've got about half of the interviews recorded and most of the rest scheduled already. So we're leaning a little male this season, which I love. I've always had a mix, but it's typically leaned more female. So this is a nice change. You're going to hear stories from 2 military veterans who transitioned back to civilian life. I have a handful of queer stories, which I am so excited about. It is my goal, now that I really have my feet under me with this podcast, to go out and search for more non-straight, non-white transition stories. So if you know any BIPOC folks who have 40 stories, I would love an introduction. And if you know any LGBT folks who have 40 stories, please consider introducing us. Also this season, I'm going to be sharing another story of a relationship with a narcissist. And I seem to be averaging about 1 per season. So this is an interesting theme. I'm looking forward to sharing with you this story of a woman who slid from partying and working as an exotic dancer into addiction and then homelessness and finally prostitution. And then really her story of rebuilding her life on the other side. You'll hear from a man whose life looked pretty good, so he couldn't figure out why he wasn't happier. But a friend convinced him to say yes for an entire year to whatever came up, and that helped him really rediscover himself. I'm going to share with you the story of a woman approaching 40 who has worked through some of her midlife ick and has a lot to look forward to as she turns 40 this year, because her first book is going to come out around the same time as her birthday. And you'll also hear from someone who thought things were going well at the startup she worked at. She had the fancy title, the business travel, the seat at the table, but she came to realize that she was actually being taken advantage of. Can you imagine a 10-hour Skype to work on a project? Oh my goodness. Finally, around age 35, she started to realize that she just couldn't do it anymore. And she took a major leap into a new field, back to the bottom of the ladder in a new career, and found success on her own terms. There is a beautiful story of a woman who had a, by all accounts, lovely 11-year relationship with a man 10 years her junior. And she's going to explain why and how she left and how everything she ever wished for was actually on the other side of that relationship. And then I'm going to talk to someone who very easily could have been in my crew through my 20s, where contemporaries and lived a lot of the same experiences in the 90s. And we both identify as late bloomers. So this was a really fun conversation because we both came up with some insights about our own stories that the other one related to, really uncovering more about the forces that shaped us as adults 1.0. And that's really just from the first 10 of the 20 conversations I'm going to bring you this season. This podcast is truly one of my most favorite things to do each week. So I am so thrilled to be back, and I look forward to bringing you 20 more stories of midlife transition. So whether you're approaching age 40 and starting to feel the first signs of the ick, or you're well past your transition and looking for comfort and camaraderie in the stories of other folks who've made it to the other side, I'm so very happy to have you here with me. Next week, I look forward to introducing you to John Lawyer, who spent 16 years as a warrior in Kuwait, Baghdad, and Kandahar before retiring from the military and coming home at age 34. at which point he had to figure out who he was. The transition from warrior to civilian was a challenging one, but he woke up one night, at some point during his 40th year, to a moment of clarity, which led him to a spiritual path and uncovered his life purpose. I can't wait to introduce you to him. I'll see you next week. The 40 Drinks podcast is produced and presented by Savoir Faire Marketing Communications.